Welcome to the Mental Mile. I'm Chersky.
I'm Christy.
And we are moms, friends, and therapists.
Hey, Christy, how are you doing?
Hello, Chersky. Doing very well today.
Awesome.
How are you?
I'm pretty good. I just got back from a strength training workout, and that was fun. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, we've talked recently. We're sort of on fire this summer. I love this for us in terms of podcasts and connecting. But kids are at camp today, and I've got 2 more weeks before I go back to work. So I'm trying to enjoy the last little bit of my vacation. And yeah. And I've been like having time to do, I was telling you, a little bit of meal prep, cooking during the day, a little bit of yoga. So I'm feeling good.
Yeah. At any day that you have time to do yoga and don't feel like you're rushed about it, you know it's a good day.
Yes.
I love that. So you must be in like staycation mode. I really like staycations.
Oh, I love it. I think all parents, you know, love when your kids are safe somewhere, well taken care of, and you have the house to yourself.
Yes, it's so quiet.
It is just so really a dream.
That is a dream. Well, my kids are not at camp this week, so I have the opposite. But that's okay.
That's right. We can't all have the dream at the same time, I guess. My kids were here last time we chatted.
That's funny. All right. Well, so let's jump into our topic for today. I'm excited about this one. So I sent you an article called The Limits of Therapy Speak.
Yes.
It's from Vox. It's by Allie Volpe. And this is kind of an opinion piece, but I thought it was something kind of fun to jump off of because I've noticed, I don't know if you've noticed in the last few years, that out there in the world, people who don't even go to therapy are using a lot of therapy language and or therapy speak. So it's kind of changing how people are relating around mental health issues, both for the good and the bad, I suppose. But I thought we'd just kind of crack this open.
Absolutely.
Where should we start?
Oh, I don't know. Why don't you direct us somewhere from the article? But when we chatted about this a little bit offline, I got really excited because I think we had, that's something you've been noticing for a little while. I'd love to share a little bit about what I see with the middle schoolers in terms of that therapy speak. And I had just heard about some articles from my partner, from some famous therapists around how a lot of that language is being misused. And both of us got really excited about this topic. So we definitely said, this is the next one for us. But where should we start?
Well, so I thought maybe it would be fun to say, like, what is your favorite or least favorite therapy speak term that you hear a lot that you're just like, ah?
Well, okay, I'll say this. Narcissism and people being toxic. So I want to be very clear that toxic is not a therapy speak term, right? That's not in our diagnostic manual. We don't use that. But when we think about as therapists, personality disorders, which are a cluster of disorders that can be a little bit more challenging or resistant to treatment, maybe there's some longer term treatment, some, you know, real ingrained habits and behaviors that if people want to make the change, takes a long time. And they can be pretty pathologizing and negative, right? And one of those is narcissistic personality disorder. I think with Donald Trump or different politicians or different, even like true crime podcasts that are out there, there's a lot about narcissism. Right. And, that's not, completely informed by the mental health perspective and is just thrown out there a lot. And then with that, the other one that I see, which is really about an unhealthy relationship or friendship, is the word toxic. And again, it's very pathologizing, right? I mean, nobody wants to be called toxic. It's sort of a carry-all, basically you suck. Those are some of the words that I see. I think with older adults and my peers, it's more the narcissism piece and then just seeing the media's use of that word. With the middle schoolers, it's the word toxic and the misunderstanding of boundaries.
I want to get into the misunderstanding of boundaries with you in a minute, but it's funny because you picked my two top ones, narcissism
okay.
and toxic. And I think you and I talked about the word toxic in one of our episodes, maybe in season one. I can't remember which episode, because it has been long one of my like sort of pet peeves for how people use it. I will occasionally use the word what like as a describer with clients, but I always feel like this tinge of like, oh, I should really avoid that word because it really does pathologize. And because that's how people use it out in the real world is like you said, it's like kind of a way of saying like, you suck. Like, right.
It's connected to the boundary. So once we get to the point where we decide somebody's toxic, then we can use our harshest form of boundaries, which is usually a cutoff or a dehumanization of that person.
Oh yeah.
And you know, you can see how in the middle school mind with much compassion, you can see how that would get very quickly misunderstood and used back and forth. Even adults struggle with this, right? So you try to put that kind of language within a middle schooler, and you know, the understanding is not going to be as sophisticated, even when us as adults have trouble with these concepts.
Yes, yes, absolutely. And you know, for a while I used to do co-parenting work with families who were court ordered because they couldn't work out their custody agreements and they were having difficulty parenting together, right? So divorce situations, right? I mean, for the most part. And the terms toxic and narcissism mm-hmm. are probably the two most common words I would hear in that group of people. And even among like friends and family, when, you know, somebody's going through a divorce, I'll hear people use these terms. And what I always like to remind myself, and I often share this with people, there's two sides to a story. And like, you might feel like someone's really narcissistic, but I had the lovely privilege of interviewing one parent just solo, finding out their entire story and having so much empathy for them. And this is what happens every time I interview them, and I come away feeling like, oh my gosh, like this is your whole story. This is like, you know, I have so much empathy for you. This is terrible, you know. And then I'll meet the next person, and I always give them the benefit of the doubt too. You know, you don't want to be clouded in judgment by the previous story. So I try to start that way. But then I hear their story and I'm like, oh my gosh, I have so much empathy for you. This is, you know, this is terrible. And the truth is that they both have some truth to the story, but when both of them just call each other narcissist, you know, they're just putting fuel on a fire, and it eliminates the nuance of like what actually is going on, what they're actually fighting about, or what the source of the pain is. And so it's really becomes unhelpful to start using terms like that when you're in these kinds of situations, because it only contributes to more conflict, not less.
And I think, you know, the tough part as therapists is if you are really in relationship with somebody who is, you know, full-fledged in narcissism or a personality disorder, you know, one of the things you'll feel is just sort of like a bulldozer or wreckage in their path. But I think what we've really gotten into in our media world and in social media is diagnosing people without actually treating them. Or, you know, and so it's like you want to have more information, and you want to use those labels in a way to serve you, right? And they can in some ways, they just tend to be overused without a professional looking at it or assessing the situation. And I can imagine somebody in relationship or recovering from a relationship with a narcissist might feel invalidated, right? To say, well, we need to look at the nuance of the different things. But I think what we're more reacting to is this sort of, well, one of our favorite podcasts, Armchair Experts, sidelines view of just like, that's healthy, that's unhealthy, that's this box or that box. Yeah. And there's empowerment in psychoeducation, right? And then the downside of it is that you have all this information and terminology out there without the container of treatment with a qualified professional.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I agree with everything you're saying. So yeah, I think maybe we jump into that boundary piece. So how is that? Because I know that was one that like really sticks out for you. So how does that show up, and what are you seeing out there in the real world?
Well, so there's that piece around toxicity and friendship that I see as young as fourth grade in my work. Wow. And, you know, mostly girls are slinging the word toxic at each other, right? And mostly what it means is there is a miscommunication or a misstep or a wounding, and we don't have the language for that yet. And or that we're not supposed to be friends with everyone, right? And that just because we're not a match doesn't mean somebody's toxic, right? So there's that piece of psychoeducation and just sort of slowing down that I'm working on with the younger kids. Something that was really interesting to me in recent news, actually, was, I guess, Jonah Hill, the actor Jonah Hill, his ex-girlfriend recently came out and shared that she felt very emotionally abused by him. And he recently did, I think, a show on Netflix with his therapist about his experience with therapy and really wants to get into mental health. And although he was in treatment, or at least seeming from what she was saying, I think there's this permission when we talk about healthy boundaries as therapists, that can mean many different things. I think it's getting used out in the world, right, as a reason to cut off from someone or to ask for things that are extreme and just say, well, that's my boundary. And if you can't respect that boundary, then, you know, we're not in relationship. But boundaries is a more nuanced conversation. There's many different types of boundaries. There's right. not just one. And so I think that's a tricky one for people to understand is like, how do we communicate and provide psychoeducation while also taking into account the relationship between people? It's like holding your own perspective and then holding the perspective of being in relationship and taking time to figure that out.
Right. Yeah, it is.
What do you think about the boundaries piece?
It is really tricky. I agree with everything that you just said. I think that it gets used as kind of a manipulation tool. Yeah, but I genuinely think most people are not trying to be manipulative. That's not how they're thinking about it, but it is kind of like the result of the misuse of it, where it's like, hey, if you're, it's kind of like the metaphor of like you're in the schoolyard, and just because somebody doesn't want to play the same way as you, you take the ball and leave. You know, it's like, I'm going to catch the ball so that neither of us can play. And when really it's like, oh, we just kind of need to talk about it and you know, both agree upon, you know, like what the game actually is or something, right? And so the manipulation happens when you say, no, you don't get a say in this, I'm walking away. And it's a breakdown in communication, and which is the opposite of what the term boundaries is really for, in my
and what we're trying to promote, right? I think you're right on. What I was trying to express in that roundabout way is it can be sort of weaponized or used as a form of manipulation, whether intentional or not. And so I don't know how nuanced we want to get, but there's, you know, when we talk about boundaries, there's like three different types of boundaries, right? So one is a very rigid boundary like that. You took my ball. I don't like it. You broke my boundary. I'm out of here. The other thing around the weaponization of the word is that people do understand it's linked with mental health. So it's almost like you're saying, you're hurting my mental health. You're unsafe. I'm doing this. When really, if you had the discussion, right, and there wasn't the breakdown of communication, you could still decide you didn't want to play together. That might be the end result, but it's how we get there. And can we get there in a healthier way, in a way that is more communicative and less sort of pathologizing? And then you have people who a lot of times we help in therapy loosen their boundaries, right? And so you, so instead of that rigidity, right, you're trying to find out, when should I be flexible? When should I stick with this? What makes me feel safe? And then you sort of, the ideal is having that flexible boundary piece. And then on the other end of the extreme would be somebody who didn't have a lot of boundaries. Maybe it was more people pleasing or other things. They're worried if they assert their needs, people won't like them. You know, those are just like loosely three different ways to look at it. And the goal often in therapy, and what got me really fired up when we were talking about this, is that you're not going to get it to a place that fits in an Instagram square or, you know, fits in a podcast episode or even just in a book, right? Is that there is more nuance. And can we hold the gray? Can we hold two different things that can be true at the same time? And the idea is psychological flexibility and the same thing being flexible boundaries. Knowing myself well enough when to know this doesn't feel good, so that's a hard no. This doesn't feel good. I'm not going to say a hard no. I'm going to take a step back, check in with myself or talk to my safe people. You know, just it's the ability to be able to change your mind. It's not all, you know yourself so well, you've done 10 sessions of therapy and you'll never be challenged with a boundary question again.
Right, right. Yeah, I think when people use the term boundaries kind of loosely, or they throw it around not really fully understanding it, they are using it in that black and white way where it's like it either is or it isn't. You either are in or you're out. And boundaries in particular, this very specific term, I think is such a gray, you know, issue where it's like,
yes.
It's like there's always so much context that you need to be considering. And it does come down to, some people are more oriented to be having loose boundaries, and others are more oriented to having rigid boundaries, and knowing yourself, where do you fall on that spectrum? And what's your comfort level with, certain issues? What's your safety? And absolutely, you should use boundaries if you need them. But if we're just kind of saying like, oh, I feel unsafe, and like you're not really thinking it through, like it's a gut reaction, that's not helpful. And it's really it's cutting down the communication, and it's leaving the other person kind of left out of the whole issue. It's not good conflict resolution by any means. But you
There's a
can do
way.
it in a way that it is good conflict resolution.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I just want to share too, like I know, Kirsty, you shared about your journey with postpartum recovery. And I always say in my work, I'm a recovering perfectionist, right? So I've done a lot of work around the boundaries piece and trying to go from boundaries being too loose to more of a flexible and really rigid when it needs to be in terms of safety. And this is not something I learned just from graduate school, right? I learned this by being in therapy and doing that work. And I understand that that is not time-wise financially available to everyone, but I just want to share that, right? It's not that I just had these intellectual conversations with people like you and went to school, told other people to do it. Like, I got it. Here I come. And I think what you get to is that point of you trust yourself to use your support system, to reflect, to take space and breaks. You don't trust yourself to always know what it is, and to be able to communicate that right away. I think our society really values loud communication, extroverted communication, just sort of blurting out something witty. And there's so much beauty in being quieter and taking a pause and taking time to step back as well. That could be done through spiritual practices, meditation, somebody's religious community. There's other ways to go on that journey. But I just want to share that I worked really hard on that. And not for 10 sessions,
Not
like
for 10
a
sessions,
lot more,
like
a lot
probably
more.
many years.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think like in general with mental health, most things do, you'll have periods where they spike and periods where they recede, but it's always like we're always a work in progress, and that's okay. Yeah.
That's okay. Yeah. Were there other areas from the Vox article that you wanted to bring up?
I wrote down like the list that they had in there. So they had
Oh,
narcissist,
yes.
toxic, which we went over, boundaries. They also had the word trigger, which trigger is one of those words that, like, I as a therapist, I feel nervous saying it because I feel like there's some really negative connotation that like the general public has attached to it. But when I say it, I'm like, I'm using it in a way to like, it's the thing that precedes the other thing, and it's important to
Right.
identify for you, the sake of your treatment. And so I try to come up with other ways of like saying it without using that word, but it's really hard.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I also noticed there's a lot of, and I spend more space on that Instagram than you, but there's a lot of talk about therapy on Insta, I mean, sorry, trauma on Instagram, where you're gonna get specific trigger attached in a way that feels more precious to me because it's related to trauma. And it can be used in many different phrases and different ways, but the big thing with trauma work is containment. And so, you see a lot of psychoeducation that, I know has its value, but also can really rip a lot of raw stuff open for people. And then the 30-second reel is over, and then the slides are over. And where's the containment, right? Which is the biggest piece around trauma work and pacing and safety and understanding your triggers and really knowing, do I have enough internal and external resources to go to this next spot? And so that's where I get triggered around the word trigger is more in that trauma space online.
Well, and trauma is also one of the words that was brought up in the article. So they do go together. And I
Right.
think trigger can be attached to trauma. It can also be attached to addiction work. It can be attached to just behavioral stuff in general, because you're using
Right.
the word to help understand your behavior, like what your behavior is linked to in your environment. And so they do go together. Those, trigger and trauma are oftentimes you'll hear those two words in the same conversation. And I think one thing I don't like about these words kind of taking on, at least the word trigger taking on like a really negative sort of connotation out there in the public, is that it makes it harder for me to have that very concrete discussion with a client because I'm scared that I'm going to like be triggering them.
Right.
For lack of a better word.
And I think a lot of the work in therapy, right, as a therapist, if you're practicing within the scope of something that you're able to be practicing, because we don't treat everything, right? We all have our different specialties, is getting more comfortable with being triggered, right? And being triggered in a safe place and having a different emotional and hopefully healing experience that can help build up your resilience. Because, you know, life is not about not being triggered, or as I say, life is not about just being happy. We are going to have to be resilient just because life is that way. We don't get a choice in it. But also I say, when I think about parenting or myself, is, you know, living a meaningful life, living a life where I have pockets of contentment, but every day is not going to be peaceful. And you would be really bored if you kept your life so small that you were never challenged or didn't have to bump up against a trigger, whether that's at work, whether it's with parenting, or, you know, you're not going to get out of it with parenting. You just sort of sign up for it when you have kids, but you're just not going to get around it. And so that's sort of what we're trying to do. Do you notice your clients? Because I don't have that issue in middle school. We're not quite to that level when we talk about CBT or different things. Sometimes I am bringing out the thought triangle or different things, but a lot of it's through play therapy or art therapy. So we might not get into those words as much. Mm-hmm. Maybe I'd say stressor, but do you find your clients being more resistant to that term?
I would say it's probably more frequent with my teen clients to be, have a negative connotation with that term.
Okay.
Than my adult clients, and so, which makes me think it's maybe generational. You know, it's like, what does that term mean to that generation? That's probably where I see it the most. Yeah. Okay. And then honestly, I see it a lot on that word and toxic. I see a lot, you know, in places like Instagram, like you've already mentioned. And just online in general, and that it can be kind of frustrating, but
there's a lot of like 5 ways to deal with toxic people, right? And something I try to bring to my Instagram, and I hope that I do, is a lot of psychology can be used to manipulate people for marketing, right? So what I try to do is like, maybe 5 ways to deal with this challenging behavior or things like that. Because we really care a lot in therapy about not saying someone's autistic. We say somebody that is on the autism spectrum, and really trying to break out just maybe one part of them or a behavior from who they are as a whole person. But it doesn't sound as good, right? And you're not going to get as many clicks. But I try to be very intentional around that, right? I could create blogs all the time that say 5 ways to take care of yourself as a parent so you never feel tired again. Well, that's a lie, you know? And so I really do try to be mindful of that. But that's going to be when you're just trying to create something, whether it's manipulative or not, but concise, right? Whether it's 140 characters on Twitter or something on Instagram, you're going to have to cut out a lot of that language. Right. But for professionals, that piece is important to us. That nuance is important to us.
Yeah. And I think that's very responsible of you. So bravo.
Thank you.
I think, you know, just general advice to, you know, everyone out there is like, when you see these terms being used on like a random Instagram account or on Threads or something like that, that you just try to remember, you know, like you can hold 2 thoughts at once. You know, not everything is black and white. Try to think beyond just like, oh, this person is sharing this message because it means something to them. It might not be perfectly exact, you know?
Absolutely.
Allow for things to be imperfect in our world and understand that we're going to come across things that aren't being used correctly.
Yeah. And I think in general, what I try to share with the kids that I work with, because, you know, we're planting seeds and they're younger, is instead of getting really caught up in the labels, it's like, who, when you listen to your gut and just how you're feeling, do you want to invest more time in? And maybe who does not feel like you want to invest that much time in? And why is that? And getting curious with that. And also, they could be a really good fit and an amazing friend for someone else, but we're not friends with everybody. So what is it about the people that you're drawn to? Instead of having these more black and white conversations of she's in, she's out.
Right.
So it's changing all the time.
Yeah. If you find that you're one of these people that's like tossing these words around, like try to start using more descriptive language. That's like a great way to kind of address this is that, oh, when I called that person a narcissist, what I meant was, you know, they ignored me and that hurt my feelings. And I felt like they ignored me because they cared more about what they had going on than what I had going on. That, you
Yes.
know, that might feel narcissistic to you, but that person isn't not necessarily a narcissist. So
Absolutely.
just, you know, find more describing language. And then when you go see your therapist, use that describing language and let your therapist be the one to be like, that sounds like narcissism to
Right, that's a big red flag or
Yeah.
whatever it might be.
Right.
Absolutely. Yeah.
There were some more words in there. I don't think we have to catch every single word in our personal conversation, but you know, I'll just list what they were. There was trauma, gaslighting, and mother wound, which was an interesting one. So, it's definitely not an exhaustive list. That was just that one article. That's what they came up with, and I'm
Right.
there's others out there, but yeah. So I think
Well,
we touched on the most important parts.
the most important ones, right? We could do a whole nother episode on gaslighting. We could talk about the word bullying. That one wasn't in there, but it comes up a lot in the schools. And I think what you were saying is when we look at like cognitive behavioral therapy, which is about how our thoughts, feelings, and behaviors align, when we say, this narcissistic person attacked me, we're going to feel a different feeling and probably a more intense feeling in our body than if we say, this person wasn't paying attention to me. I think they might have had other things going on, but I'm going to check in about that with my therapist later. Our body is probably not going to react with the same intensity, which just leaves us open to a little bit more of a discussion. The other thing I wanted to touch on just a little bit was self-care as well. My partner sent me an article from Esther Perel. And she is the famous couples therapist about just sort of self-care. It's too much. We're honoring our needs too much. It's overblown. And I get it, but I think what we're trying to say is we don't have to throw everything out. Just because something's hit a tipping point and people are talking about it a lot doesn't mean it's bad or that it's out. It just means, you know, what I'm so passionate about is that self-care and community care can coexist, right? It's not either or. And in fact, to me, a lot of self-care, which is nurturing relationships or things like that, really is community care as well. There's this way we want to break everything up. And then we see as therapists, in terms of the different methods that we're trained in, and we sort of decide what feels good for us, what might work for different clients, and we pick and choose from different things. You see so much overlap in these things that are marketed as completely different things. And so I guess the overall message, right, is just the tolerance of many different shades, right? And not trying to wrap everything up in a neat box, which would maybe reduce some anxiety, but it's just not realistic.
Well, and to just kind of piggyback on that, like probably the reason so many people are misusing therapy terms is because more and more people are ex like open to therapy. It's not something that's a lot of the stigmatization for many people has been significantly reduced, so people feel comfortable using those terms. And therapy's cool again, you know? It's like, or not,
Right.
therapy's cool, right? So
Right.
people are trying to kind of be aligned with that message. And so I think language is living, and so meanings change based on how people are living them out, and this is maybe an example of that. Maybe we will end up changing some of these terms eventually, but for now they do have like certain meanings, and we just have to kind of understand that they're not always going to be used perfectly as intended.
Absolutely. The pendulum swings back and forth, but yes, that would be the flip side, right? I think there's a concern as people who work in the field of like, oh, this is getting away from us. But the flip side of it is, isn't it great that people want to talk about it more and hopefully have less shame around that? Yeah.
I've loved this conversation. It's been really fun for me. I hope you've had a good time too. So we said, let's talk about a favorite self-care book since we're on the topic of mental health. What's yours?
Well, what came to me right away is our second most discussed person, which is Dr. Shauna Shapiro. Again, she was our teacher in graduate school. I talk about it a lot, which is Good Morning, I Love You. And I forget the complete title, but it's basically, you know, mindfulness practices for calm, clarity, and joy, mindfulness and self-compassion practices. So this is something I've given to different family members who are sort of newer to that therapy speak. And something I really talk about when I talk about mindfulness with clients, I really see that mindful self-compassion being so big compared to when we were first studying and learning so many years ago. It's mindfulness, but with the attitude of kindness. Right. And there's just practical things that I've taken away from that, and particularly practicing in Silicon Valley. Shapiro does a really good job of mixing story and history and spirituality with the neuroscience, which really speaks to the people in this community. And for us, Chirsty, as you know, little therapy nerds, we get excited too around it. Anecdotally, doesn't just feel better, but what is happening when I'm rewiring my brain in this way? I gotta say, I loved her TEDx talk too. If you are a tired parent or just you like to read other things, if you look up Shauna Shapiro and her mindfulness TEDx talk, it's really wonderful as well.
Yes. And I've shared with you previously, but I'll share with our listeners. I use this book with almost all of my clients. It is one of my most frequently used books. It's a great, it's for all the reasons you mentioned, but it's just very, very, it breaks down what mindfulness is and how to practice it. And I love that after each chapter, she encourages you to write down what meaningful takeaway you personally have so that you make it meaningful. And Christy, I'll share this with you later. Years ago, when the book very first came out, I compiled all of mine onto a little Instagram like photo, which I've never shared on Instagram. Anyways, but I'll share it with you so you can share it with our listeners.
I would love that.
My personal takeaways were,
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And what about you, Chirsty? I love the story behind the book you picked today.
Yes. So my pick is Atomic Habits by James Clear. And one of the reasons I'm bringing this book up is because I have had numerous clients tell me that this is one of their favorite books that's been useful for them. And for a long time, I was like, yeah, like, you know, we all need to learn better habits. You know, I'm your therapist. I'll help you with that. But I finally listened to it. I listened to it on Audible, which was was a nice way to take it in. But it is as good as all my clients said it was, and it is pretty meaningful. It's pretty inspirational. And it'll help you train a habit. It'll help you unlearn bad habits, and it breaks it down into really bite-sized chunks.
I love that. I just love that came from your clients. It was a client recommendation. I thought that was so great. And there was a time when that book was everywhere. And so I can see the beautiful cover and the gold coming out. And so, yeah, I could see it'd be great Audible as well.
Yeah. Yes. It's been numerous years. I can't remember what year it came out, but it's been around for a while. Yeah.
Yeah. Or maybe it had a resurgence. I don't know what it was, but I feel like recently I saw it a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, so hopefully people will get those two books and, you know, change their lives.
Absolutely.
For the better. All right, Christy, it's been so fun chatting with you, and catch up again soon.
All right. Bye, Chirsty.
Bye.
Thank you so much for listening today. Make sure to leave us a review and subscribe. That really helps us with the podcast, and share it on social media with your friends. And if you want to find out more and follow us, you can go to The Mental Mile on Instagram.
And check our show notes if you want to check out our books, Self-Care 101 for Busy Parents, which is an ebook by Christy, and Running for Mental Health, a How-To Guide by Chirsty. Take care, everybody.